You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast.
Hello there, my name's Stuart Goldsmith. Welcome to the show. Apologies for the slightly odd sound quality of this bit of the show. I am out of the country. I'm doing some gigs in Bahrain at the moment for the Stand Comedy Club. And although I'm having a wonderful time, I have neglected to pack a single AA battery. As a result, my little Zoom recorder that I was going to use to do this bit is not working. I'm having to do it on GarageBand. And as a result, it sounds a little bit tinny. So apologies for that. Nonetheless, welcome to the show. I'm very, very proud of this episode. I think you're going to really enjoy it. This is another one. It's the first one, actually, chronologically, recorded live at the Gilded Balloon during this year's Edinburgh Fringe. And this is Mr. Hal Cruttendon.
Hey, man. Come, take a seat. Hal.
I've broken the mic already.
Immediately. Good work. I'll cover.
Earlier today, I just did exactly the same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this you not knowing your own strength?
Or I know. I'm just so desperate
to perform. Give me the stuff.
Exactly. Oh, it's, but yeah, I've been doing a lot of acting, not a lot of stand-up, so I'm desperate to sort of hold a mic.
Okay. Well, we should, before we get stuck in properly, we should now, there will be people in the audience, I'm sure, and if not in the room, then in the audience at home, who are fans of your work. You laugh there as if to go... maybe they won't, but they definitely will.
There might well not be.
However, if you don't know Hal, can I do an annoying thing to you and ask you to just tell us where you are in your career? What sort of for anyone listening or here that doesn't know you, how are you doing?
I'm on an upward curve.
You are, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, man.
But it's taken me a long time to get here. But you never meant to say that. I've been being a comic quite a long time, but I've had quite a big break. Like the last year and a half, I had a very good Edinburgh last year, and I've done Live at the Apollo. I've got a Radio 4 sitcom next year. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a TV sitcom that might not happen, but I like to mention just because I'm working on a TV sitcom, people go, oh,
totally,
it's
totally worth saying. In fact, it was an audible in the room.
Yeah. And I just did Mock the Week the other week, and I'm doing it in September as well.
Brilliant.
And I might be doing more in the autumn. So I'm about to become massive, and you're very lucky to see me now live.
I think that's funny though, but it's true. I think you're in that position that someone like Mickey Flanagan was in a few
who
years
I share
ago.
An agent with.
Well, absolutely. But yeah. Someone like Mickey Flanagan, who nowadays is a household name, not very long ago was, as you have been, kind of floating at the top of the circuit, known to all comedians on the comedy circuit in Britain as someone who absolutely does the job night after night and gets, you know, it's a huge reaction, and yet for some reason isn't a famous face just yet. So, but you feel that, you're aware that it feels like it's happening.
Well, you are, but you never feel safe. It's like, but nobody ever feels safe, and they pretend that they do. You know, people think, oh, you do something in the business and you're fine. You're fine forever.
Yes.
But I don't want to be rude, but everybody is tomorrow's Les Dennis. But Les Dennis is doing fine. Do you know what I mean? He had a bit of a comeback, but Les Dennis was massive once and then became a kind of joke of his. And that is going to happen to loads of us. If you make it massive. David Walliams said in an interview, I don't feel safe. And yet all of us as comics on our way up, look at people like that and go, oh, that's it, you're safe. You're holidaying in Barbados every year, you're rich forever, you're fine.
Yeah.
No one's ever fine.
As if I think that's a misconception of the public as well, isn't it? That as soon as you do some telly, you're a telly person now, and consequently you're rich. Yeah.
Kids that might have given my kids hassle at school, going, why does your mum drive such a crap car?
Really?
And then my wife said, why do I drive such a crap car? It's really annoying. But they do. They think on telly, you're loaded.
Okay.
So, and actually, we are. God, I think. This is people always in showbiz generally earn less than you think they do.
Yeah.
I know this is the wrong way for this to go.
No,
but
this
I just
is
I wanted to make that point out there.
This is exactly what I was saying.
We're
before.
Not starving, but we're not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is exactly where we wanted to go. What this is supposed to be is the stuff that you don't get to say in any other interview.
Yeah.
And so any other, just as a general note, any other truths that you come up with that we think aren't widely known, let's just slam them in as and when we can. That'll be, they're more than welcome. Brilliant. So the show you're doing at the moment is, this is actually, I hadn't realised, this is the beginning of a tour. You're doing Edinburgh's
Yes. I had this very successful show last year, so I'm coming back. I'm only doing 8 shows of it in Edinburgh, in Edinburgh as the beginning of a tour, but I'm here for the whole month doing a play. Doing Making News, which is at the Pleasance. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't really be plugging, should I, on this podcast?
You can if you like. Some of them might go to it. He's
it's
getting
very
his coat
good.
On
it's
already.
Got, yeah. it's got loads of... It's got Phil Jupiter's in, who's brilliant.
Yep.
And it's brilliant. So I'm actually up here for the whole month doing that, but it's the beginning of my tour of last year's show.
Okay.
So what I mean.
So let's talk about last year's show then. So the show is called Tough Lovey.
Yes.
And you'll have done empty sort of press things and sound bites and what have you about it. And it's presumably, I mean, from the title, is it about anything? Is it just your best stand-up? Is it your best stand-up masquerading as a theme?
I always do my best stand-up masquerading as a theme.
Okay.
So, I mean, I always have titles that are that basically describe me. They're always, you know, I think I had a show a few years ago called Climb Every Molehill.
Yeah.
There were things that were sort of, they're like me, making big deals out of little things. And Tough Lovey is very like me. I think is the best description of my act. Because it is camp, it is smiley, it is nice, but then very unpleasant things are said underneath.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Quite nasty. But also I like to think I'm a bit dangerous when maybe I'm not as well.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know I was telling you before we started that I only woke up about 45 minutes ago. Yeah. I'm a little bit vulnerable.
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. I will plunder that vulnerability. That's interesting. So let's fix on that for a moment. I raised an eyebrow at that when you said all very dark things are happening underneath.
Yeah.
The stuff that most immediately comes to mind for people that haven't seen Hal before... something of yours I watched recently on YouTube that I really enjoyed was you talking about how you use food, how you don't enjoy or savour food, you use food, and you're very good at characterisation. You're a very physical performer, and you do a fantastic impression of you wolfing down a kind of buffet, which does, in fact, now I think about it, it does have a kind of darkness, a sort of desperation, a kind of need to it.
Yeah, I mean, I have more about weight and my weight issues because I've been bigger than this and slimmer than this. And all that. But it's a lot of comics do stuff by going, I'm fat, I'm funny, oh, fat thing. Mm. Fat people are depressed about it. And that's the comedy is about going, you know, especially men. You know, men go, oh, you know, people say, aren't you fat bastard? And all that. And it is a problem. I tend to write quite good comedy about what I'm angry about. And I'm quite angry. I have friends who apologise to me after I did some material on how you put on weight, and your mate goes, what happened here? What happened here? And the patting of your belly. Yeah. Oh, I, you know, lost control of my eating. I'm far less attractive. It's just this assumption that somehow we're not allowed to be upset about it. And I think we should do stuff about being upset about it. We should do stuff about we do comfort eat and we do all those things. So I try and do fat stuff that isn't just going, I'm fat and isn't it funny that I'm fat?
Sure.
Having said that, I still do those jokes as well.
Yeah, well,
let's tell you about being vulnerable. I'm gonna make this.
No, I think that's really interesting because you're like the last time I saw you gig, we were at the Comedy Store, and you are well known for a couple of things. A bit of background on Hal, the things Hal is known for in the comedy circuit.
Oh.
One, Hal is very known for doing five or upwards of five gigs a night and running around the place. We'll talk about that maybe a bit more. In an industry in which you can get one gig a night and two if you're lucky, and maybe in the old days it used to be three and that's not really around anymore, there's a sort of running joke. If you do, like on the set, you might not even be aware of this, if one does a double or a triple gig of a Saturday night, some people in the dressing room will go, whoa, easy there, Hal Cruttendon.
Yeah.
You know, as like to you, as a kind of a, who do you think you are, mate? Do you think you can keep up with him? So that's one of your, one of the things you're known for. And another is that you are known for doing ever so well, and then coming off and going, oh, I don't know how that went. Oh. You know,
am I known for that?
I say known. I know you for it. I recognise it.
Yeah.
That you turn up and you go, oh, how is it? How are they? How's the gig? How's the audience? Are they okay? Oh, God. Yeah, to have that kind of neurosis.
Yes.
And then going on and doing an incredible job and taking the room off, taking the roof off, and then coming back and going, I don't know. So my question really is, like, with regard to that, do you think you are neurotic about performance? Do you think that there is a darkness? Because given how light and fluffy and friendly and funny, the Telegraph, roly poly funny man.
Oh, God.
I know. I looked at that earlier on. I thought he's not going like that.
You bastards.
You know.
Oh, people say Michael McIntyre has to die before his career will take off. That's like,
Is that? Do you get that? Okay.
I mean, if he does die, I'm in shit. Oh,
no. motive and opportunity. Yeah. So that's.
Am I neurotic? I mean, I am. Sorry. So the question: am I neurotic? I am. I'm totally neurotic. I totally fear. I mean, I didn't think I was going to be a comic till I was like 26. Mm-hmm. And I did it, and I used to watch it and think, oh, could I do that? And it does still scare me. It still terrifies me, the chance of humiliation, the abuse you get. You do go through a lot of crap doing this. Have you been attacked a lot?
Physically attacked, do you mean? Or heckled?
Or physically threatened? And
physically threatened? What, in the middle of a gig? I got bottled on once, but they hadn't seen me.
Oh, yeah, that's good. But I just find just that level of people, when they dislike you, they really hate you. There's no way you can prove that you've got any ability. And also there's a chance of saying things where people physically want to hurt you. I've had a soldier hold me against, not in a sexual way, hold me against a wall.
No one here was thinking that was in a sexual way.
Something about my voice saying soldier. I do find it quite scary in that way. But also there's an arrogance behind that. Neurosis. Mm-hmm. That, oh, am I going to do well? Am I going to do better? Oh, and coming off and going, I didn't do very well after a perfectly good gig.
Sure.
Is an expectation that I must storm it massively.
Okay.
So it's an arrogance behind that. Aren't I little and fluffy and sweet and worried? Sure. So I think that's where the inner unpleasantness is.
Okay.
So I told you about my father now.
No, this is fun. This is the stuff that we want to talk about because I do. I suppose I'm getting caught up in two different threads here. One is that the material is light and fluffy but has a darkness. And I suppose the other one is that Hal Cruttendon is quite light and fluffy and friendly. But if maybe the darkness there isn't an anger so much as a fear. Like you seem to me to be someone who, like myself, is very keen on being liked.
Yes.
Yes, it's important to you that you win people over. So you maybe worry about a gig, and I'm putting words in your mouth here, this is my own experience, I will maybe sometimes worry about a gig and whether or not everyone will love me enough.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Rather than where some acts who couldn't give a fuck or purport to could turn up, do the gig, smash it, not go so well. Oh, those guys would... Like, I never come off and blame the audience and go, those guys were dicks. I always come off and go, I didn't do it. How do you react after a bad one, is it?
I don't know, but I'm getting more arrogant the more experienced I am.
Okay.
So I do. It depends how I feel. There are a lot of the time, actually, I do find an audience is nice, and I know I haven't been so good. But you get more experience as a comic. You know, you walk on. Especially there are corporate dues you walk onto. I don't know if it's dodgy to talk about doing badly at corporates. It's a very, very rare thing, and I need the income. But there are a few. There are some corporates that are set up so badly, they go, we'll put a comic on and it'll work, and it won't work. And you know you've got to do 40 minutes or half an hour. You know the first line, you know it isn't going to work. You could even walk in the room and go, this isn't going to work. So I'm getting better at not blaming myself.
Okay,
going,
because
I
some
know.
Situations are impossible.
Yeah, I got booed on at a corporate in for Christmas.
You got booed on
double glazing salesman
as you were coming onto the stage.
As I walked on, they were booing. And in my head I went, oh, thank God, nothing to lose now. Oh, thank God.
Okay.
And so I got off after 5 minutes and they went, yeah, no, they hated you, didn't they, before you were even on. I find when I was newer, I tend to blame myself more. But the only things I blame myself more for now is losing it, is losing my temper or something. Which can still happen. Temperamental. I'm much more temperamental than people think.
Okay. Give us an example. When have you lost your temper?
I did a benefit gig. You're not meant to lose it, benefit gig. I did a benefit gig for the Big Issue at the Comedy Store in London.
Okay.
And they had some Big Issue salesmen at the front. And they started really joining in on the gig. And they were going, I'm really sorry, we got some guys with Big Issue. And I did say, I said at the gig, I said, you know, I was joking with them, first of all, and being fine. And And this guy kept shouting, and I'm like, God, it's a nightmare, because I'm doing a thing for Big Issue, and tomorrow morning when I walk out the station, someone's going to go Big Issue, and I'm going to go, fuck off, because they were wrecking the kid. But this guy, I said about something about my daughter, and I said my daughter's named Grace, and he went, Grace? What sort of fucking name is Grace? Fuck it, oh, as though the grace of God. He did and I thought, oh, control yourself, control yourself. I really, I just find that I'm surprised by how angry I get on stage. Before I did stand up, I thought I'd be scared by heckles.
Sure.
And quite often you're made angry by them.
That's one of the weakest times, isn't it? If you lose your temper, you've lost the game, haven't you? You've blown it, because the audience can smell that you're unsettled.
You can't take it, because you are presenting, it's not an act completely, it is based on you. Yes. And you're getting your act from you, that when people really do heckle you with stuff that really hits home or is personal or is something about your family or something that is stupid to get wound up about, you still have that moment of going, don't lose it, don't control it. I mean, I probably once or twice a year will walk off before I'm going to lose it. Mm. Now, I don't lose it now, but I've had, oh God.
That really surprises me. I'm fascinated to hear that, because I do think of you as you're a friendly, you're an outgoing act, you're enthusiastic, you're warm, audiences like you, they respond to that. I don't think I've ever, I mean, I could definitely say I have never got so angry that I've walked off stage.
Oh, really?
So where does that temper come from? Is that something you've always had in your life? Has that been a part of your life since you started doing stand-up?
I don't know. I don't.
You obviously consider it completely normal. I've never experienced it. What is it?
I don't know. I think it's that thing of my background is acting, mm-hmm. and I think I have a problem accepting that stand-up is not ever is the least respected of any sort of art forms, if it is an art form.
Sure.
And I can't bear that thing of going, my God, it's all being. It's not being respected, which sounds really silly.
Okay.
Considering I have an act that's all about not being respected, but when people aren't being an audience or won't allow you. I mean, a bit of heckling I do enjoy. I do enjoy bantering when it's something that's quite positive, or even when it's negative, you turn it into something positive. But when someone is just pissed out of their mind and it's Saturday night, I think it's also to do with the state of your career. I think comics lose it. A lot of comics claim they don't lose it, but a lot of comics lose it because I'm good at this and I've been doing it for years, and I'm playing a stag do on a Saturday night and I'm having to take shit and take it up the arse because I'm just their comedy monkey boy. I think there's an arrogance behind that. How many people go out, this is destroying my career. But I do think loads of comics feel that, and they claim, oh no, I'm just really a purist about it, and I do this. But actually, it's because we work so hard, and then we pretend we're not working hard in comedy. Yeah. We pretend we walk on and go, I'm just a born funny guy, and I haven't done this. And actually, we've worked really hard to develop something that is good, and if you give us the space to be funny, we will be funny. When people don't let you do that, it's quite hard to go, oh, I'm just going to, you know.
Sure. So do you, well, there's loads to talk about there. So one of the things I think is, do you feel that you in particular present more of a target? Do you feel like you present a soft target to audiences because you're nice, I mean, are you kind of low status on stage? You seem in command, but are kicking yourself for being posh and daft and tubby. And
because you do have to, because you are, I mean, as a comic, I have nothing to make the audience give me any extra, space to play with.
Okay.
I am what people rip apart at the Edinburgh Festival of being white, middle class, middle-aged man doing comedy. You are the majority group doing comedy, so you get on, put yourself down quite quickly, so that because you're not going to have that sort of leeway of being, I'm something unusual, not anything unusual in the in the comedy world. So I'd say I do put myself down, but then I don't know, as you get more confident, you get more and more unpleasant, don't you? The more you can control it, the sort of Simon Evans high status sort of comic is. I have a lot of edges of that in my comedy, but I don't know. I like those laughs that come from ripping yourself apart as well, as long as I'm in control of it.
Yes,
so I'm probably quite a control freak.
Okay.
Because I remember finding out I was putting on weight and first getting, you fat bastard, on stage, and I went, you bastard. You know what I mean?
Roy
Chubby Brown gets them
to.
I actually know the state of your weight by the heckles you get. It is useful in that way.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's okay. I just.
No, you won't. You might never have this.
Noise from the audience there of people going, God, that's just awful.
But I had that with finding out how grey I was. Great. And you think, this is actually quite handy. You do find out people are telling you exactly the state of your aging and your body.
That is, if nothing else comes of this, but that's a great angle and you should really explore that. That's funny. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's great.
Well, to start the show going, now, what do you think?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, that can and then really take work. Notes. They go, come back in a year. I'll be really funny on that.
Yeah. So you're... So we were talking about the whether or not you're a soft target. Whether it's interesting. I mean, I don't know whether it's just that you, how long have you been going in comedy?
I was thinking of a story that happened here, God, 10 years ago.
Okay.
Talking about being a soft target. I was doing Leighton Live, and I followed Reginald D. Hunter. You know Reginald D. Hunter, yeah. And Reg got on, and Leighton Live's very studenty, very young, you know. And Reg had gone on and was doing great, and they loved him, and but he was quite stoned. I think he'd just been nominated for the Perrier, and he said, "I'm a bit off my face and a bit off my game," but he was still brilliant. The audience are loving him, shit. I walked on after him and got shit immediately.
Yeah,
and I came out with a line that I'm so proud of. It's not that funny. I went, "Look, I know Reg has been on, and for many of you, he's sort of the man that you want to be, but maybe I'm the man that you really are." And I really won it round there, but I was like, you fucking wankers.
Yes.
You're picking on the guy that impresses you is gone, so let's pick on the guy we could, you know. Yeah. And I'm not having a go at students, but it was that kind of, oh yeah, we want to be like you, Reg, you're cool. Oh, who's this funny little, you know, and I'm chippy about it.
It's interesting, your chippiness, I'm fascinated by it. I totally understand it.
I'm getting worse though, about everything.
You think? Mm. Is it painful to talk about your flaws on stage? Obviously, there's an aspect whereby people shout stuff at you, shout abuse at you. But separately to that, when you're talking about the way you use food or your uncomfortableness about your weight or your status within your marriage, things like that, is it ever painful to sort of, you know, do you feel you're laying your soul bare, or do you feel that you're kind of using your soul as a jumping off point for some funny stuff you thought of?
I don't think it's painful. It's bonding, because everybody has lots of issues. So you're talking about issues. Everybody has issues. So it's great that you're sharing. And the laughter comes from their recognition of the issues. That eating thing I really like, because that is such a... Mm. It's about comfort food. It's about eating fast. It's about, you know... And it really did get big laughs. Because lots of people comfort eat.
Sure.
Lots of people, you know.
And it is. I was crying laughing at it, just watching it on YouTube, because the sort of speed and anger at yourself with which you're miming this food is a joy to behold.
So I don't know. So it is nice, because actually, if you get a laugh, it means you're sharing something. That people are laughing at you, but they're laughing because they recognise what you're talking about. Mm. So I don't think it's ever painful. I think you've got to be very aware of what's wrong with you as a comic. And I, that's what I like, comics. Comics are not precious, generally.
Yes, okay.
Well, good ones never are. That's what I love about the fact that, even though I'm saying I am quite precious, but we are very aware of all the things that are wrong with us. Mm-hmm. We're very aware where we fall down. We're very aware with all those things. I mean, I do so much about not being manly. And yes, that is a big issue, but it doesn't feel painful when I'm talking about it on stage.
Okay.
So want to be a more manly
man. I was going to say, do you ever want to be a more manly comic? Do you ever sort of look out the window and think, wouldn't it be great to be a leather jacket wearing, smoking kind of...
Yes, it would. But also, you know, it's not you. So it's kind of refreshing to be... Because comedy is about turning the world upside down. It is about fat people are funny, you know, camp people are funny, people who are against their gender stereotype are funny. So if you're the cool comic, you've got a different sort of thing to deal with. Mm. But this is so complex, isn't it? Whether it's quite, yeah. It's not really complex, but I've got quite a low IQ. That's nothing to worry about. Anyway, I did a quick thing on the internet and scored quite low, and it was kind of refreshing. Because people go, things. I'm very intelligent. I'm going, God, aren't I doing well considering my problems? I'm sort of borderline special needs. It's amazing. It's that refreshing. I think I'm angry at the world that laughs at us for having those weaknesses, but also then the fact people are laughing, they are bonded, okay. You know, they're understanding what you're talking about. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, sure.
But I remember being a kid and suddenly realizing that in adventure films, God, I will never be. Or you're a teenager, I will never be.
You
Bruce
won't get
Willis,
to be the hero.
Ever. Will never be the. I will always be either the, you know, the funny sidekick or the evil, pathetic one that when cornered without his minions. You know, I'm not that I'm trying to cast for these roles, but I but it's, do you know what I mean? I can't ever be that sort of, but does every man go through that? I think every man know, most men know that they are not the manly man. But
sure.
I do have a particular issue with it because I have always had been quite effeminate. I've always had a very, you know, a very, before my voice broke, I sounded like a little girl. I look like a little girl.
And many of us are thinking now, but you still sound a little girl.
Yeah, no. It is a big issue. It hurts. It makes me angry. But it doesn't make me so angry. No, it made me angry. And obviously, when I started doing comedy, I was single. And that was when I was trying to pull women. And that really annoyed me. People going, why don't you talk about being gay on stage? Because I'm not gay.
Yeah.
which really annoyed, because I was on the pull. But but now I'm married with kids. So I'm, you know, just a little bit upset that people don't come on to me. But not that I'm looking for an affair, by the way.
Sure. But no,
I don't think my wife listens to podcasts. No, but you know the thing where you say to people, oh, isn't he good? He's very faithful to his wife. Yeah. You know, maybe if you're very good looking and you're a very sexy man, well done. But I don't know about you. I mean, well, you must probably get it a lot, but I never get tempted because I never get offered.
Incredible scenes here at the Comedian Dreams Podcast.
So this is how I've got next to nothing to say about this episode because I think it's all in here. I thought this was a great interview, though I say so myself, but largely because of Hal's openness, his honesty, and we get into some really good stuff about process, about performance, and some insider stuff about the various panel shows he's done. And I think Hal was just very, very open about his anger and his need for some sort of cause to fight. This is frankly textbook ComCom, and I'm very, very proud of it. Bit of news, after the Brendan Burns podcast, Brendan has been in touch and we're going to do a follow-up before too long, so look forward to that one. He's a very layered man, Brendan, very layered comedian, so hopefully we're going to remove a few more of those, peel back some more of those layers and find out some more about him. I think there's a lot more to find in that. And I noticed that in this episode I mentioned cool comedians in leather jackets. For some reason that came up as a trope. You know the sort of act we're talking about. Brendan, a perfect example, certainly previous Brendan. Yes, I'm just flagging up that, listen, don't send me emails telling me that every episode I mention cool comedians in leather jackets. For some reason during that Edinburgh, it just came up quite frequently. Next time, it's the glorious 50th episode of this show. The glorious 50th episode. Brilliant. It's a little anniversary. I can't really believe there's been 50 of them, but I suppose having done 25 at Edinburgh, I suppose I can. Do keep emailing me in general, if not to give me abuse about leather jackets. info@comedianscomedian.com or tweet at ComComPod. Thank you for your emails. I've had some very touching ones recently from people who I think have got a lot out of the show. And it would be a bit sentimental of me, really, to read them out. But I do love receiving them and reading them. So thanks if you're one of those. And please keep sharing the show. Someone asked me about a donate button recently. I haven't got round to that yet for a number of reasons. I feel a bit odd about asking for donations. That may change. But the most powerful thing that you can do right now is to say thanks for this podcast, is simply to choose a friend or a couple of friends who don't know about it yet, target them, harass the hell out of them until they're as hooked as you. So get more people going. You can still, if you're a comedian, you can still become a super goldsmith by tweeting your followers and telling them about it. Lots of people have been doing that. I'm very, very grateful to them. And there was something else. What was I going to say? It's gone. It'll come back. Now it's back to Hal Crutton.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
I want to focus on something which I think has come from you. I don't think I've put this in your mouth, but you have, in talking about the last couple of things we've been talking about, you have said it makes me angry. You have said that gets me. Yeah. I feel that anger at the world. Let's just explore that a little bit further, because for me, that's a real surprise. I certainly can see the darkness in some of your material, maybe. Yeah. But I've never thought of you as an angry person. Is anger something that... You know, when did you last really lose your temper?
I live with a championship angry person. I mean, my wife isn't, she's almost God, this is really racist. She's culturally angry. She's got that Northern Irish fuck yeah. She's actually a very happy person, but when she's angry, and I love it because it means I'm not the angry one when we're angry.
Okay.
But I am a shouter. I am a bit of a shouter and a bore, but I'm just a bit of a cynic and a bit of a miserablist type. Is it? But most comics aren't they? Most comics are quite negative because they're taking the piss out of society. They're undercutting society the whole time. They find social norms annoying or silly or bothersome. So I think most comics, it's like most comics are introverts.
Okay,
this is apparently done.
It's
in
funny
surveys,
actually, because I'm having done several, like 50 or so of these interviews. There are less and less tropes that I can connect to most comics. And I'm just in my head playing a little game there as to, if you say most comics are like this, maybe actually what you're saying is I'm like this.
And I want to seem like I'm a comic.
So I was trying to put... No. What do you know what I mean, though?
I want to fit in with the gag.
I'm just trying to put that sort of through the filter of you saying that and going, okay... If you were... When you say most comics, if you were saying I, then what are the things that we're looking at there? Is that you... You seem to me to have a really interesting dynamic between I want to fit in and I want everyone to like me, but I'm annoyed at the world and I'm angry and there's kind of a really interesting tension there that I don't think is true of most comics necessarily, that I think is true of you.
Yeah.
That you're doing nice stuff to win people over, but it's about stuff that you hate or that makes you angry.
Yeah.
Or pain that you're experiencing in your own life.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, These are my best jokes, I'm saying, because I'm suddenly thinking of my show going, okay. God, people would think, God, going to hell's show must be really deep and psychological.
No, absolutely.
And lots of it is fluff and silliness.
Sure.
But I do think that, I'm trying to think about what things I do, because I do things on politics, I do things on... I tend to take some things through me that I believe of society as well. I believe people are far too opinionated about politics with far too little information.
Sure.
I can't bear blokes on radio phoners going... You know what they need to do?
Yeah.
They need to send in the SAS. That'll sort. You know, that bullshit. Yo, shut up, you wanker. Whereas in my comedy, I'm a bit of an idiot about politics.
Yes.
And I'm up to a level I am, but I've also got a degree in politics. So I just haven't done any work. I haven't thought about it enough for 20 years. But, you know, but it's that thing of, you do tend to get rid of issues and anger about stuff, sometimes through yourself. Sometimes people saying, I'm a bit like this. When you're not so like it, you actually... say to people, do you recognise that in yourself? Do you know what I mean?
I understand. Okay, so what you're saying is you recognise a thing, it annoys you, and in order to communicate it to an audience, the most useful way for you to do that is to say, oh, you know when you're like this, to make yourself the victim.
Yes, yes.
Gotcha.
I think I tend to do, which is a massive cop-out probably, but I'm trying to be a mainstream comedian, shut up. But the best comedy is the stuff that does make you angry, that you do care about. It is, you know, somebody wrote me a letter really angry about an Alzheimer's joke I did, saying, my father's dying of Alzheimer's, how dare you? I'll break your legs if you come to Swansea or whatever. And I wrote them a letter back, and I totally understand how this... It was a joke about Alzheimer's, and it was pretending it was a terrorist group. It was Al-Qaeda Alzheimer's. It was a brilliant joke. It sounds shit, but it was brilliant. But it was that thing of going, but I think we've got to laugh at all these... And they said, would you make a joke about cancer? And I was like, of course I'd make a joke about cancer. We should make a joke about everything that scares us, everything that moves us, because those are things where the biggest laughs are, where you are taken to the edge and then somebody undercuts it and takes a right turn. And we should laugh at death and suicide and things that people, you know, think are taboo. And this is the problem comedy has, that the best jokes are always the ones near the edge, and yet they're the ones that people are very quick to go, that's a disgrace, that, you know... That someone's made a joke about that. So I do think...
Do you feel free to make jokes about all of those things. Do you, or do you worry that they'll be misconstrued or misunderstood?
I've tried to make jokes about quite painful things in my life that sound painful, and it's really hard to do.
Okay.
Really hard to do. Really hard to make a joke of something that, even if it happened a long time ago, they will go. I'm not talking about really, I'm like death of my father, but this is like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Nobody. It's really hard to get that to work because they worry about you. You go, no, you know, this is
okay.
This is about things that we all go through. This is things that we all, sure, you know, experience. So
was that, and when you were mining that subject for material, yeah, were you needing to express it? Were you needing, yes, to get it out?
Yes, and you cut, because that's why comedy is, that's when it's great, when you really get something out of your system that bothers you about. Thing. I mean, I was saying I'm chippy. I'm doing so many jokes still at the moment about not just campness, middle classness, being southern, being London, being English in Scotland, being because I'm chippy about. I don't know why it bothers me of belonging to a group that or being middle class, belonging to a group that is perceived as never having suffered, and it's true. I haven't. Shit.
Yeah. Okay.
I've always got issues about that, and it's very hard to keep that working because I'm thinking, God, that must be what's really bothering me in my life as a comic, as a person. Sure. I want an issue. I know that sounds. God, that's so middle class up its arse, isn't it? I want to be a woman so I can get angry about feminist things. I want to be a, you know, I want to be Scottish so I can go. I believe in Scottish nationalism, but as an English person, you know, I want to kind of.
Yeah, they don't want your support.
Yeah. I want to be gay rather than camp so I can go on, yes,
actually have a
society.
You want a cause.
Yes, exactly. I don't have, it's pathetic. I'm just like a little teenager at university still.
And why do you want that cause? What would it mean to you if you had one? What would be different?
I don't
I mean, would it be better for your career? Would it be better for making people laugh? Or is it that you have a sort of untapped anger, like a directionless,
yeah, I suppose it thing. Is it's I suppose it is a sort of, yeah, I think it is a sort. It is a sort of untapped anger, but and having no reason for it, or no obvious reason. I'd love to be. I mean, I'm very jealous of people that can hang their anger on something tangible. Of course, it's real, but it's like. But I think some people just go. Oh,
yeah. When you were trying material about the death of your father, and it wasn't working, what sorts of things do you think could have made it work? I mean, just off the top of my head, the fact that you look quite happy and successful,
yeah,
probably counts against you when you see.
Yeah, but do you know what? I try to do a bit about this. I mean, I do an impression. I sound like, I do a thing about sounding like Tony Blair. It's not just that though. Tony, I remember him being asked just before, God, this is the 97 election, being told the grin. People go on about the grin, Tony. Why do you grin, Tony? And I was going, tell the truth, Tony. Tell the truth. Tell them that it's because you're tense. Don't, of course, you went, well, I'm just a happy person. But that is tension.
Yes, okay.
That happiness is tension, isn't it? It is kind of, look, that's my way of dealing with society. And I have exactly the same thing. I have exactly the same, oh, really? Oh,
yes.
Lovely to see
Everything's
you.
Everything's fine. Yeah. Everything's so good.
Yes. And it's all just very, and you just, you know, so it's just a way of dealing socially. And it's a way of performing.
Okay.
But I do think it's, you know, it's performing, but also.
And in terms of the performing, do you feel like after you've done your hour show, do you come off feeling like, oh, great, I've expressed that stuff? Or do you come off feeling like, excellent, the writing that I did and the performance that I did to make everyone laugh, you know, do you feel like I'm satisfied that it worked? Or do you feel like, oh, I got the stuff out?
For me, it's bits of both. I still think I'm getting better as a comic. Mm. So I hope I get nearer more stuff where I walk off and go, oh, that was fantastic. I really got things out of my system. What I have now, I think, is bits of my show are bits where I go, duh, that's of it.
Yeah.
Duh, that's, yeah. Tacking that gets something out of my system. And some of it is just good jokes. Mm. But I would like to, yeah, well, I think I'd like to be a more sort of passionate about everything I say. I'd like to be Bill Hicks, but not Bill Hicks in a,
sure,
you know, obviously I can't be cool and, you know,
yeah,
I can
be the sort of worst, like, impression, you know, of Bill,
I'll
Hicks
be, yes, like, yeah. Tony Blair bloody furious about, yeah, you know, I actually had sympathy with Tony Blair because of the way I felt like him. Then you read his autobiography?
I've not read it.
It's the only autobiography I've read where you like a man less at the end of it. It's historic because, I always had that theory that if you get him in a room by himself, eventually he might crack and go, I'm so sorry, Iraq was terrible and it was,
yeah,
all a mistake.
Yeah.
No, he's a wanker. He's an absolute, believes it all. He's a sanctimonious. Anyway.
Sure. No. The relationship, I want to just look at, before we move on, when we'll talk about writing and your writing technique, yeah, and stuff. And also there'll be some opportunity for questions from the audience. So,
oh God, really?
Yeah, there will. Did I not tell you about that? Sorry.
No.
Yeah, you can ask him literally anything. Just before we move on from this part, I just want to talk just a little bit more about the relationship between yourself on stage and your real self.
Yeah.
Who is it? Is it kind of one for one? Are you being yourself? Are you heightening some parts of you?
No, you're being a heightened version of yourself. But I think, and I don't know whether most comics think this, I think the longer you go, the more you become your true self.
Yeah, that, so I've not heard it put like that, but I think that's right.
Actually, I definitely started as, hello, oh, football, isn't that funny? I was like that when I first started comedy, and then I've become, just because you get more confident, you do become much more yourself. But I'm still not there yet. I'm still quite a way away from that. Even a few years ago, I watched myself walk on to McIntyre's Roadshow or Royal Variety a few years ago, and I walk on, and even then, I try not to do it now, going, hey, hello, whoa, brilliant to be here.
Yeah.
Fuck off with that. Do you know what I mean? It's not brilliant to be that. I've got to find a way to get on stage without having to go, oh, love me, love me, love me, love me, love me. Here's some jokes. I really want to just go on and go, hello, Well, obviously, hello, it's lovely to be here. This is quite exciting. But well, obviously, you can't go on and be totally real. You can't go on live at the Apollo and go, oh, this is a massive night for my career. you have to pretend you're... we are acting, all of us. Anybody who's walking on stage at the Apollo and going, whoa, yeah, and they're kind of pretending we just come for a chat. We're shitting it backstage, going, shit, this means a lot of seats on tour being sold. Or and Mock the Week, we're doing that, which is all... I always think of the comic who's sitting there on Mock the Week going, and laughing at everybody else. Inside their head, they're going, I'm not being funny, I'm not doing enough, I'm not doing enough. And they're looking like they're being supportive, and you can see the eyes. They're going, shit, I've got to get in here.
And interestingly, the audience doesn't get to see the eyes because they only see the stuff that works because of the edit.
Yeah.
So actually, I mean, how long, just talking about Mock the Week, how long does the actual recording
The record last? Is 2¾ hours for half an hour.
2¾ hours.
It's really
hard. Of seven people trying desperately to get their joke in. I mean, but you obviously have done it well enough, you've been invited back.
I had a really good one, but I did psych myself up. You'd have to go, whew. And also, the thing of being going longer, I'm not so, I know everybody on it, apart from Hugh Dennis. I knew everybody else I'd worked with, and so it makes it a lot easier. You're not coming in as the real new boy.
Sure.
I was more like, I don't think I wrote this, sort of told something. I was more like the sort of slightly backward kid that should have been doing this class.
Finally caught up.
Yeah. Finally caught up. But it is a thing where you have to go right and be bold and jump in on people and go, they do their line and you get in and you get your stuff in and you've got to get your jokes away and, and be funny and you think of something funny and you're in fast. And
How much writing specifically for that show did you do?
My wife wants me to move out for 5 days before the next one. Okay. That's how much I am. Mock the week. Everything is like prepare, obviously. Shouldn't we be talking about being prepared? Should we? Prepared, Mock the Week. Yeah. Obviously, lots of it is off the cuff at times. I'm not going to get another one now.
I'll bleep the name of the show. They'll be able to work it out.
But you can guess what the news is going to be. So I'm very, very...
You know what the news is and you can do a certain amount of preparation. I don't think anyone thinks that when Frankie Boyle was doing it, no one thinks that he was coming up with those one-liners on the spot. They're jokes, aren't they?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Anyone? I've mentioned this on the podcast before. Oh. I had a very interesting conversation with a lady on a tube train once who was very sort of intelligent, perfectly nice, educated lady who we were talking about Ricky Gervais, and she was saying, the thing with Ricky Gervais is I keep thinking to myself, he's going to run out of things to say in a minute, and then he just comes up with something else.
Oh my God.
And I had to sort of tell it that's all been written. When you see him do an hour of stand-up or whatever, it's all been written. But the name of the game is we all try to make it look like it's spur of the moment.
And that is the problem, because we do get caught out. But, you're not as funny off stage. People go, they should. But that is what we're pretending. We are pretending. It is a show.
Mm-hmm.
So we are trying to fool people into thinking we are just Mr. Funny. My wife wakes up in the morning and goes, say something funny. Like, okay. God, we just piss ourselves all day. Oh, thank God I married you. You're lovely. It's like, But that is the illusion. People do think we're, and you know, don't they, that we're walking around being hilarious all the time, when actually we're walking around going, I don't have enough material. I've got to get some more jokes.
Well, let's talk about the getting some more jokes process. Mm. How did you start writing? When you started doing comedy, what was your means of actually getting some stuff to say on stage?
I did a workshop.
Okay.
So the methods of the workshop. I was really scared. I was doing it because a friend got me into comedy. A group of friends got me into comedy because I wasn't working as an actor, mm-hmm. which does say a lot about me as a comic. Like, mm-hmm. I don't drink before going on stage. All these things, because I see it as, like, very much a performance sort of thing. I think I'm losing that more and more. I'm trying to become more natural. But, yeah, friends got me into this workshop, and it was all about using these methods that... What's it? Jean Perret or something? It was all about ways of writing jokes.
Book. Yeah, yeah.
And another one was Rant and Rave, which I think is probably what most people write comedy with, which is just talking about a subject and just something you feel strongly about. You're happy about, you like something, you hate something, you love it or you hate it. It's, you know, more extreme the better, and just writing loads of crap and then just finding jokes out of that. But I don't use any of that anymore. I mean, that got me onto the, you know, open spot circuit, really. Okay. Finding that way of writing. But I do take ages to write. I tend to have lots of different topics going at the same time on my computer, mm-hmm. and I've got something on it. I think there's something funny about it, and then I keep going back to that and go, I've got something.
And
else.
And you're a sit down in front of the computer writing.
I am. I script complete Edinburgh shows and script all my stand up, but then the show is never like it is on the bit of paper. Okay. But I like to know I've got a script. I think that's the actor part of me.
When you say you script it, do you mean you sit down and write it all before you
Absolutely.
Take any of it on stage?
I have a real writing.
Before you take any of it on stage.
Oh no! Yeah, I write every joke I think I'm going to do.
Okay, and then you
and
learn
then I go
it,
and try it,
and then you go and try it.
Well, try it or read a bit of paper
yeah,
and
sure.
try out.
Okay.
We try out material, you know, new okay. material nights. But I do script it, but then the jokes never end up as they're scripted. They do tend to change with the rhythm or the mm-hmm. way they, you know, the way they work. And you do get, you do build jokes from audiences as well, from things that mm-hmm. happen and interaction that happens and.
Do you have any particular systems or kind of rules of writing that you adhere to, or is it just the case that you? I mean, what does your writing week look like if you're writing for an Edinburgh show? And don't panic if there isn't one, because they go, "Come on,
it's
man,
very
I'm
funny talking about
hour.
Writing because I've hardly written any stand up for like 2 months because I'm writing
sure.
I'm writing a sitcom and being in this play and things, but. I would say it's quite. I've got quite low concentration, so I only have to take a section of the day. Mm-hmm. I can't do 6 hours of stand-up writing a day. I might be able to do three, mm-hmm. And usually it's just taking something that's a. It's usually an idea that I put on my iPhone. Something's okay. occurred to me during the day, and I put it on there, and I go, right, can I make this funny? And usually. The big joke is there, is somewhere already, and it's
because
about
that's
getting,
why it's occurred to you that yeah. I think I can do something with this.
Yeah.
So what sort
but
of?
You still don't know if it's going to be funny until you
sure.
do it on stage. So.
So, but what sort of methods do you use to try and find the funny in something? Do you?
God, I don't know.
Do you write it from different people's points of view, or do you always write it from? You know, come on. What
God,
is it?
I really don't. I really don't. I really think of the big funny thing. This is.
Yeah, yeah.
I told you my IQ is
sure,
quite low.
Sure.
There's like a big there's like something that's funny that occurs to you, and then you just write the try
you've
and write
to,
material
you've
around
to try
it
and to unpick what that was that why that's funny.
Yes, I mean, why yeah. that was funny. Why, that's such a hard. It is.
Yeah,
weird
it's an
now.
Impossible question.
No, but I think if I was a new comic, I would be able to tell you much more my method. I think
yes.
I have far less of a method now.
Okay.
I tend to go, and also I tend to be regurgitating and building on material that never worked 5 years ago. Mm. I'd written something, I find it and go, oh, that might work. I'll do that. I'll shove that bit in there. That joke that never worked there, but and I'm collecting stuff together. So I've really got a messy method at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's easier to write to a topic. It's why it's nice to be on when you're on a panel show or you have to write for something. You do find the funnies when you're told you are going to be writing jokes this
yes.
week about David Cameron, the Tories, or you will then go, oh, concentrate. It's about keeping your focus on that thing. Because we're, you know, and staying off YouTube and Twitter and how many followers do I have?
How many followers do you have?
Not enough. I'm old. Older people, we don't do as well. Sorry, I wasn't including you. You're prematurely grey, aren't you? Quite young. You are, aren't you?
Yeah, ish. Yeah.
Yes, no. But young comics get massives of followers, don't they? And I find older...
I don't think it's because of your youth.
No, it's just because I'm not very... Okay.
Well, no,
I don't tweet that much. How many have you got? Have you got a lot?
The podcast, I think, at the moment has got about 2,500.
Oh, I've beaten the podcast then.
Whoa, there we go. Okay. That's the first person I've interviewed who's told me they've beaten the podcast.
Sorry.
No, not at all. That's interesting that you... that your take on it is that young people have more followers. I guess
it's my excuse. No, but some people seem to have masses of followers, but then I think they tweet a lot.
Yes.
People always tell me I should have, for the amount of telly I've done, about 20,000 followers, and I have 7.5.
Okay.
So I'm always worried about it. So if anybody would like to follow me on Twitter... Can I come back when there's a bigger crowd?
what are you talking about, Hal? We can't fit anyone else.
Oh, sorry. Yes. No, cut that. What was I talking about? I was talking about, I think it's about focusing on that top. If you work hard enough on a topic, you will find the funnies.
Okay.
But it's about going, is this going to be funny? And it's got to have something interesting enough to hold you. I don't know. I find my brain flits about a lot. And also, I go back to the same topics again and again and again because I'm traumatized by them.
Okay.
I'm so middle class. My kids take the piss out of me. That's my latest thing. But I'm trying to make it too cliche because everybody's kids seem sick. But mine are just moving into teenage years.
Do you ever worry that you are hitting the same subjects and audience might get tired of them or something?
If they're funny enough,
yeah.
There are. I think a lot of comics are talking about the same stuff quite a lot, aren't they? Something like Alan Carr is. You know, you're not going to get stuff on. You know, I wrestle bears or something. You know, you're going to get quite a camp show, and on quite camp. So I think
people
that's
have preoccupations,
thing.
Don't they? That they like to.
And I'm quite preoccupied with being a bit suburban, a bit middle class, family, bit weight issues, camp issues. I mean, camp issues always come up. My kids, my bit of material I'm doing at the moment about, you know, my children's series. I don't think anybody's kids say to them what my kids say to me. And they're 12 and 11. They say it in a loving way, but they go, oh, my little fat camp gay daddy. And no one... they know it's funny because they've seen me do stuff on YouTube. And I go, but that's just, it's not... I wouldn't... My dad was a big bearded, tough man. You know, it's the level of lack of respect astonishing. But they're girls.
They are girls,
thank God. So that's they don't need to respect me.
So if everything goes according to plan with your sort of upward curve that you're on at the moment...
This will be an embarrassing interview that's going to be dug out and I'll be ripped apart in the sun.
What do you want out of it? What do you want out of your career? Do you have like a particular goal that you're working towards, or is it enough for you to just be kind of getting progressing year on year?
It's enough. To tell the truth, I think it's about lots of things, like having a family. You want to, you know, I have kids that want to go into artistic jobs. I feel like, God, I want to make loads of money. That's quite blatantly. I didn't care about money, had a family, and now I'm going, shit, this is an insecure job. I want to make lots of money.
Yes.
That's a horrible thing to say.
Perfectly reasonable. But, you're an adult.
But, you know, you worry about all those things. So that on a pure thing, but that is not my main goal in comedy is to do things I'm really proud of. Mm. And that might be a great stand-up show, a great sitcom. I'd love to do all of them. I'd love to. I must admit, I do panel shows. Panel shows have no interest for me beyond can they further my career? Can they get people to come and see me do stand up? Mm-hmm. Can I get my sitcom on TV? Can I get that? That is my dream. That's always been my dream. Big stand up shows in theatres and sitcoms, possibly sketch shows. That is my ambition. Yeah.
In the writing of your sitcom, then, how does that differ to the writing of your stand-up? Do you? Because I've never understood I've been a stand-up for about 9 years, and when the people I was doing stand-up with suddenly started saying a couple of years in, oh, I've written a sitcom. Mm. I always remember thinking, how? Who told you how to do that? Who taught you? Where did you learn how to do that? I knew how I was learning how to do stand-up because I'd write something and then I'd go and do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, talk to us a little bit about the...
I'm writing it with Dominic Holland, even though it's about me.
Okay.
So I'm writing it with someone who's very experienced at writing scripts. Mm-hmm. And so even though he doesn't have my innate genius, he's very good structure. He's really rude. When I got mocked the week, he went, look, just accept it. You will look plump, but enjoy yourself. He's a horrible man. You know Dominic Holland? He's always, yeah, he's very, we're yeah. very different people. He's very, he's quite right-wing reactionary, quite tough.
Sure.
And I'm very soft and lefty and kind of, you know, and sort of, obviously inner toughness. But I like having somebody holding my hand on that. So yeah. he's written loads of scripts because I'm not experienced at it. So sure. I didn't just go into, I would always do that of doing something that's, I'm really, especially because you kind of get, a lot of people mess them up. Sitcom, they get the sitcom on their name or on their stand-up, and I sort of, you know, with Radio 4 commissioned me on this partly on they were interested in me because of my stand-up.
Yes.
So I wanted
it's,
to make sure
it's
I
weird, isn't
something
it?
Really
like
good.
You get really good at one thing that you've been training in yeah. for years, training or working yeah. in, and then people go, "That's great. Can you do another thing that's nothing to yeah. do with?"
But it still is writing jokes, scenarios. But I for me, it meshes it all. It's perfect. It meshes my because I do really love acting. I do love. That's what I was trained in as well, you know, being an actor. So I sort of, I sort of love that performance thing and writing a whole, you know, a whole sitcom, a whole piece. I suppose it is different. It's easier to write a sitcom, I think. It's easier than stand up. Stand up's the hardest thing to write because you've got to be fast. You've got to be funny so often. So
yes.
joke. Whereas a sitcom, you can set something up and have quite a big joke, and it's. You know, sure. it's shared between different characters' voices and things. So I think it's easier to write than stand-up. Nothing's as hard as stand-up, I think, to write.
We've just got just a moment or two left, actually. We've overrun very slightly. But if there's anyone would like to ask any questions, then feel free to.
Nothing nasty. Remember what we said.
Yeah. Yes, there's one over there. Hello. This gentleman's asking, if he saw you do 5 shows in a night, would it be the same material every time?
Yes, you would
be bored.
We're
talking gigs, aren't we? We're talking like 5
yeah,
gigs.
You would be bored. I mean, usually I don't really do that much anymore. I did do that at a certain point. But in London, I would vary it completely to which gig I was doing. So maybe I was doing 2 at the Comedy Store,
yeah.
where you're doing biggest, safest bet stuff. And then if you're going to smaller clubs, there's so many people who could get annoyed by this, but you're a little bit more experimental
yes.
if you're doing
yeah,
a smaller
yeah, no,
club and going, I'm going to mess
that.
About a bit. But for me, because it drives my brain a bit mad, I will keep the structure quite similar. So I will go, I'm starting with that and I'm ending up there, and maybe there'll be a bit of a detour. But to stop myself going mad and not repeating a gag at the same gig, I will have an order of materials. So I'm going, you know, wife, family, regional stuff, bit of politics, you know, whatever. God, it sounds boring, my act. But fascinating material, you know, my dog and things like that. I will always sure. end on my dog or something, you know, so I just to stop me going mad. That's
okay. Any others? If you walk on stage and you feel straight away that the audience aren't up for it, what can you do to change?
Well, usually you just, I'd sort of ask
that's a good,
you that.
That's a really good question.
Because you do kind of plow on. The thing that's awful is I only really have this, or I've only had this in the past year, at a corporate. What you're doing at a corporate is you're being paid much more money than other gigs.
To perform
so
in an environment that is not
do
right
it.
For comedy at all.
You have to prove to them that they've messed this up and that you're going to do. You have to keep going. You can't just go, oh, this isn't going to work. You can't reference it too early. It's so weird because you are way ahead of the audience. You
yes.
know they're going to sit there going, this guy is shit.
Yeah.
That's what's horrible about comedy. People will go, he's crap. And they won't
they hate it.
Yeah,
they
yeah. hate it because it's the environment. I mean, it's really weird why that happens. It's really hard to explain, isn't it? Why sometimes a gig just isn't going to work. It's just the way it's set up. It's just the way half the room's talking and they will not shut up. So they're constantly being distracted by something. But you just have to plow on. I mean, actually, with that, you usually find you can't die quite as completely as when you're brand new. You usually find a little group of people. If it's massive and 500 people are talking and play to the 200 that might be listening at the front and maybe reference it a little bit. But the main thing is not to look like you're really upset, not to look like you're really angry or you're scared or anything. You work extra hard at going, whoa, this is a bit, oh,
I find,
I'm just so relaxed about this.
Yeah, and, yeah. It's almost like if you can find something that makes you laugh about
yeah.
it. If you can find, I mean, and that's not necessarily in the world of doing corporate gigs, but
yeah.
normally in a stand-up club, if you're thinking, oh, people aren't going with this.
Yeah.
I try and think, if I can find something that makes me laugh,
yeah.
it'll put me back in a genuine good mood and then
yeah.
they'll respond to that.
I mean, when it's a comedy gig, you reference the material, not what you have to reference. Oh, that was a bit shit. Oh, you didn't like that.
There's a certain school of thought that says you've got to acknowledge it, because otherwise it's like you're doing your best
yeah.
joke and it dies and they'll look at you going, well, he thinks that was funny.
Yeah, and they're dying for you to reference it and make
yes.
it better and go, please tell us that you recognise that we hate you for that joke or something, you know. So.
And we've got one more over there before we wrap up. So have you ever found yourself editing yourself in your head as you work?
Oh, totally. Yeah. You totally edit yourself. You totally go, God, if they're not going for that, they won't go for that. So I'll do that. And then you're shifting things around the whole time.
And that must be hard on your third gig of the night, say, or even your second, say, these days, maybe if you're doing two at the comedy store.
Do you know what? I used to... I mean, my current manager stopped me doing five gigs a night.
Okay.
He said, it looks a bit desperate and you've got more TV now, stop it. I'm like, okay.
That's really good advice. I was going to ask whether that had been the case.
Do you know what I love? Because I am a bit of a neurotic about gigs, I love the relaxation of going, I've just arrived, am I on? Great. And not having to worry about every room. Just go on and go, I'm so relaxed. I'm just almost on stage continuously tonight for...
Yes.
You know, and I love
that
relaxation. There's
something fun about bursting through the door and having to work.
And also, weirdly, it makes me feel a bit manly. It makes me feel a bit like I'm... You know, it does feel like I've gone home pouring sweat at 1 a.m. and I can say to my wife, I was like a miner tonight. I was stuck in pouring sweat and I stuck in... I'm not just a, you know, it's that Monty Python sketch about, you know, I'm a poet and I work hard. You do feel like going, I'm a little, you know, I'm sweaty and I've been out there and it's the West End and I'm...
And I might have a silly job, but I've bloody done it loads.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's all we've got time for. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Hal Cruttendon.
Thank you very much.
So that was Hal Cruttendon. I'm sure you'll agree. I hope you'll agree. That was an absolute blinder. So thanks to Hal. Thanks to Pegs and Pete Jones for tech support. Thanks to Dan Melrose for the music. To SoTV for producing the show when it was in Edinburgh. And to everybody who emails in for waiting patiently until I get back to you all. Are you still out there? Are you still listening now? Does everyone turn off before the end of this? Is it like the first 10 minutes of WTF? If you are listening, I do worry that you're getting swamped with stuff because I'm chucking them at you. Maybe not as fast as I have been, but I do worry. So as soon as you hear this, just send me a tweet to @comcompod just saying, here, and I'll speak to you soon.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.